Welcome aboard to another episode of Badash Outdoors. If you're a first-time listener, welcome. Welcome to the Badash crew. This is about outdoorness, cooking, hunting, fishing, trapping of, you know, things and stuff, digging, clams, all things that can happen outside. That is what we're talking about on the podcast. And most importantly, all of the things that happen on the way to and from hunting and fishing and doing all of those things, because that's the fun stuff sometimes. I do this podcast because I was taught how to fish, hunt, etc. by my mother and friends. So I didn't have dad or grandpa or anyone like that to teach me. And so my expertise, my experience, my skills all come from this accumulation of people in my life that took me outside. So I do this podcast because when people do that for you, what you then do with that is you pass it on, you share it with others. So I do my podcast for that, and because I can say what I want and my mom can't stop me. Before we get rowing, here's a few announcements. I have an online store. It's live. A lot of folks have contacted me for the Badash decal that they see popping up on my Facebook page and the hot pink fish bonker, like hatchet style bonker. It's pretty awesome. And the Badash cure. So I have a steelhead cure, a bait cure, that I formulated alongside Zilla Bait Company. Those are all available on the online store. Any suggestions for other products? Shoot me a message. I would love to hear that. ash@badashfishing.com. The new YouTube video is up. I went walleye fishing a couple weeks ago with Dan Sullivan of Rivers West Guide Service. He is wonderful. The trip was wonderful. It was a multi-species trip, and I put that video up on Wednesday. Check it out. Send me suggestions for other topics, things you want to hear about, guests you want to hear from. I want to hear what you want to hear. You hear? Today's guest is Bill Herzog, and Bill Herzog is a well-known writer, an author, a fisherman. He's created some fishing products. If you go to any sort of outdoor show in the Pacific Northwest, you're going to see Bill Herzog or something that he's working on, or him in a seminar if you're lucky. And let me tell you, before I introduce him, let me tell you about the first time I met Bill Herzog. The first time we met was probably 4 or 5 years ago now, and I wanted to go fishing. I was going fishing with a friend, and my friend, his name's Richie, he said, "Hey, I'm going to bring someone along, and I think you'll like him." And all right, that's fine. And so I show up in this parking lot where we meet at the Mercantile out near Quinault Lake. For those of you that are familiar with the area, it's the Merc, the Amanda Park Merc. And Bill steps out of the car, and I'm like, that guy kind of seems familiar. And he says, "Hey, I'm Bill Herzog." And so I meet him. We all hop into the car, and we're headed towards the river. The rods are in the back, and so, you know, they're in the front. And I'm just kind of sitting in the back seat, palling around. And I do this thing when I'm really nervous. I make jokes to fill the space when there is no words happening. If there are no words happening, I will fill them with my words, and I will fill that space, and they will be jokes, and they will be terrible, just like that entire explanation was. And I don't know what was said. I don't remember what was said, but there was something about, like, people should respect this or that, or the word respect was thrown in there. And to me, in my head, every time I hear the word respect, I think of Cartman from South Park, who says, "Respect my authority." And I muttered under my breath, "Respect my authority," in the back seat of the car. And Bill stops what he's doing. He turns around, snaps his head around, looks right at me. And I thought, I've already offended this person, and it's been 5 minutes. And then he comes right back at me with his own South Park voices. We proceed to have a conversation in South Park cartoon voices. Later on in the day, we share kombucha and carrot sticks. And I can pretty much tell from this moment on that we are going to be friends. We are going to be friends. He and I, me and him, I can tell that we are going to be. And then as our friendship has grown, we are both devout reality television show watchers of a few specific shows, and we'll see if he wants to talk about that or not. But literally, as soon as we see each other, it is a rundown of the Real Housewives of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills or whatever. We're both super into it, which is, it would seem out of character if you've spent any time with both of us, but well, maybe not me, definitely for him. And so again, there's levels that you connect with people on, and these levels that you connect with others on that sometimes are very rare. But South Park, reality TV, kombucha carrots and fishing, and you've got yourself a pretty good friend. So let me bring in Bill Herzog. Like I said, he's an author, he's a dog lover, he's a steelhead spoon tosser, a reality television show junkie, an incredible fisherman, and an ambassador for the outdoors, and the type, the quality of person that you find hanging around outside. So let me introduce you to my friend Bill Herzog.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Welcome, Bill Herzog. Thank you so much for joining on the podcast today.
It's my pleasure.
So, you know, the last time you and I chat, and, you know, every time you and I chat, two things come up. One, reality TV, mm-hmm. and two, fishing. Mm-hmm. And I thought that for my listeners this time, it would be really cool to kind of capture more of who you are, because something I talk about on my show a lot is the fishing's cool, the hunting's cool, all of that's great, but it's really those things that happen on the way to the fishing bank and on your way out, you know, driving the woods and hunting. It's those moments, those friendships that you build with people that make this all worthwhile.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I have a handful of questions for you. Are you ready to get started?
I suppose I am. Let it rip, man.
Perfect. So tell us, so where are you calling from now? So we're not together, but tell us where you're at right now.
I am in the Apple capital of the world over here in Eastern Washington in Wenatchee. Yeah, it used to be 45 minutes with some great steelhead fishing, but not so much anymore. Now it's just trout, but it's a great place to be. I like to call it a beautiful prison, actually, right now. But I sure do love it over here. It's a whole big difference from being over on the coast for so many years, and I'm really digging it.
Absolutely. I went over there a couple of weeks ago to do some walleye fishing, and I made a little video on it. But the east side and the west side is so different. And if you're not familiar with Washington State, it is like two different worlds. Mm-hmm. It's like oceanic on one side, dense forest on one side. You cross the mountains and it's like desert. It's totally different. Mm-hmm.
I do love it here. I like that difference once in a while. What I really dig is after a big rainstorm over here, the smell of the sage. You know, you so get so used to the smell of the warm forest over there in the summertime on the coast. But over here, after that rare rainstorm you get when it's kind of warm, the smell of the sage is just so empowering. And it's just, wow, you know, and I really dig that. It's so different. It's something that I've not been used to my whole life. And though I smelled it occasionally when I used to come over here and fish, but not very often. But when it happens here now, I just stand outside sometimes for like an hour and just breathe. It's really cool.
I started closing my eyes once you were describing that. Now I feel like I can smell the sage. Mm-hmm. So that sounds amazing.
It is. It's really neat.
So you're there now. You were on the west side most of your life. Where mm-hmm. were you born? Like, where did you live growing up? Tell me a little bit about that.
I grew up in kind of the hub of the whole west, right there in western Washington, right in Tacoma, Washington, right in the north end of Tacoma, not far from the Narrows Bridge, not far from Point Defiance, where I used to ride my bike all the time when I was a kid. I used to run down to the waterfront and we'll fish, you know, of course, fishing always seems to come up somehow, no matter what happens. But I grew up right there. I went to high school and grade school and the whole bit right there in Tacoma, Washington.
Love it. That's where I am now. Tacoma's weird and I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the saying? To stay weird, Tacoma. And yeah, it is.
Exactly. Yeah. Now it's like the taco maw thing. Like you'll see a taco picture on the back of people's cars and like maw. Anyways. So you mentioned that, you know, riding your bike around and go fishing. Fishing would say, oh, is that your doggy?
That's a little man. Yeah. Of course he sees a reflection in the window. And of course I tell him, you be quiet now. Daddy's going to be on the phone.
Right. So what does he do? Listen to me. Listen to me. I welcome doggies on the podcast as well. So you mentioned you're riding your bike around and like fishing comes up. Like really, how did that get started for you? Like where did this passion, where did that come from?
Well, it kind of started, my uncle got me started in that when I was little. My parents didn't fish, or rarely, you know, once in a while they'd sneak up to CQ and get on a charter and you'd see them standing there holding a big bar with like 14 salmon on it from the morning when they'd go out. But that was like in the 50s. So when I grew up, I thought, oh, neat, fishing. You know, I just love to fish and nobody in my family really gave a damn except for my uncle. He was really cool. He used to run the boathouse out at American Lake and he taught me how to fish out there. He put me in the boat, taught me how to catch kokanee. Not in the way that we do it now, not at all. Back then it was all a little red fly and a couple of maggots on there with a split shot and you'd anchor up and you'd toss feed for him. And he taught me the passion of fishing. And he told, kept telling me, he said, well, one day, Billy, he goes, when you turn, when you're 12 years old, I'm going to take you down. You're going to catch a steelhead. And I'm like, wow, because my uncle had all these steelhead all the time and taught me all about it, told me how to about spoon fishing. And he took me down to the Puyallup in January, way back when, and I caught my first steelhead down there. My uncle got me started. Without him, I wouldn't be standing here today.
And now I sense that there's a pivotal shift that came after you caught your first steelhead. Would you say that that was true? Because that's what I know, like, when I think of steelheading, I think of like Cold and Herzog, like at the same time, actually.
Wow, I just saw the most beautiful shooting star right now. I'm standing outside and it's nice and clear here. And it went all the way across the sky. I should make a wish. Okay, I got it. I can't tell you, it'd be bad luck. But it's my first steelhead. I caught it with my uncle and then he passed away. And there were many years in between there where I just kind of lost passion for fishing because I had no one to show me and no one to go with, didn't know where to go, didn't have a car. So you put all that together and I wind up in a bowling alley. And so I was going to be a bowler, and I really got into bowling a lot when I was younger and in high school on the bowling team. We went to state and all that. And after I got out of there, I really got into bowling quite a bit. And once upon a time, I was one of, if not the best bowler in Washington State when I was like 19, 20 years old.
That's amazing. So I was going to go like off road a little bit and ask, like, if you could pick another profession.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
What would it have been? Do you think that would have been it?
And that would have been it. You know, in another dimension, another form of Earth Prime somewhere, Bill Herzog is a professional bowler. Bill Herzog is a stand-up comedian. I wanted to do that my whole life. I wanted to be an actor really bad. I wanted to do all this stuff. And I thought to myself, even to this day, what if? You know, what if I hadn't gotten that car accident so many years ago, 1 week before I was going to go on Pro Bowlers Tour? And crushed my shoulder, basically derailed my entire life. I was literally 1 week full sponsorship to starting in Seattle and join Pro Bowlers Tour. I was going to be a pro bowler and that was it. And if I hadn't gotten that accident, you know, which put me in quite a deep state of depression, let me tell you, oh my God, now yeah, I'm sitting here with no future ahead of me. And what do I do? I'm uneducated. What do I know? So I turned to fishing. And I thought, I can know how to fish. And it just, and away we went from there. So if not for the, it's amazing how something so negative, something in your life and you get this arc. And when that happened to me, it pushed me to fishing. And if it hadn't happened, I would not have taken that path. Definitely.
Yeah. So I know that for some time you were a guide.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so when you switch back from, you know, you heal up, the bowling thing isn't going to happen now, you go fishing. How long between that time and when you started as a professional guide, like how much time passed there and how did the guiding come about?
Oh, about 20 years. And it all started one day. My partner and I were down in, on the Cowlitz River of all places, you know, way back in the day, and we're pulling plugs. And we went with a guide. I won't mention his name, but nice guy, but not very personally, put us in the boat. And put out plugs, and we just went 1, 2, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, and caught our steelhead and cleaned them on the bank. And I said, that was it. We didn't learn a thing. He hardly talked to us. And I thought, you know what? I'm a pretty good fisherman. I can do this way better, and I'm going to prove it. So that's what I did. So in 1992, I started Silver Legacy Guide Service and just wanted
to... Wait a second. Silver Legacy Guide Service? Absolutely. That is great. Why does no one have that now?
Well, you know how I got the name? Bowling a tournament in Reno, all right? And I'm walking down the street, and I looked up and it said, coming soon, Silver Legacy Casino. And I'm like, Silver Legacy? What? I was just thinking, what a great name. I'm going to rip that off.
And like, isn't that where all great fishing guide service names come from? Yeah. A Reno, it's something you saw in Reno.
Yeah, it's a silverfish. It's a legacy. So why not just grip that and run with it? And I did. And I wanted to teach people. That's what I wanted to show them, the experience. I wanted to be a historian. I wanted to be a naturalist. I wanted to be a storyteller. I wanted to be a comedian. I could do all that stuff as a guide, not just catch them fish, like what happened to us down there. I could show people the full experience and give them a day of super entertainment, basically. I wanted to be an entertainer, and this is how I could do it. And I loved it, every minute of it.
And how long were you a guide?
For 14 years.
14 years. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you were a guide for quite a while, and then you've written extensively about mm-hmm. what it means to be a guide. Mm-hmm. My question with this is, why do people fail at being a guide?
I think they get burnt out, because it kind of happened to me too, a little bit. And it's just a lot of people are excellent fishermen, but don't have the personality. As you and I both know, I know some guys who can, I know lots of guys who could fish rings around me, but they're perhaps shy. They're introverted, you know, and they're just not real good about working with people. Great anglers, but they'll give it a shot because somebody asked them to, or they're asked to help, and they'll go, hey, I can do this. And I think they get burned out. Maybe they don't like it. I think it's just they become complacent. I really don't know. And a lot of times, well, what happened to me, we lose our fisheries. Like, I got tired of having the Skagit closed. I worked up on the Skagit. It was closing year after year. Then it wasn't, and then it was closed, and it was closed, and it wasn't. I'm like, okay, I can't do this.
Yeah.
So I went to the coast for a while, and I just found myself, well, quite frankly, getting older and doing it for so long. And I go, you know what? I just want to spend time with me and my friends. And I've just had enough of this. And I did it for enough time, and I don't regret a second of it. It was all great up until the last day. But I got selfish. I wanted that time on the water with me and my friends.
I don't think that's selfish. I think that's just human nature. I mean, you've given so much of yourself to other people. It seems quite natural to want that time for yourself at some point.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know that even beyond guiding, this one time I picked up the silver spoon and it said BC Steel. And I think you have something to do with that, correct?
I did. The genesis of that was on the Babine River in 1979. I saw a spoon called the Little Cleo, which we all know well. For the first time when I was up there, it had a little naked lady on the back, right? Naked topless dancer.
Is that still on there?
No, taken off. It was some lady sued the company because her 13-year-old son saw it, and that was the end of that. Way back when, but it's been many years since that. But back then, that was on there. And the joke, these guys from California, of all places, you come up, they brought it up to that river, brought to the Skeena, and the big joke was, the big bucks like the naked ladies, you know? So that was the deal. But I noticed this spoon, we had nothing like it here. We had steelies and these type of thing, teardrops. And this spoon was amazing. And I go, I gotta use that. So I used it for many, many years. And then when Jed Davis, who was a great writer for Salmon Trout Steelheader, came up with Pentac around 1989, 1990, he came and asked me, because I had a little bit to do with spoons back then. He goes, I want to make a spoon. What should we do? You know, put your name on it and all this. And I went, well, how won't you use the Cleo? And he goes, shouldn't we use the Steely? I go, no. We want to use this spoon because it does this and this and this. And I say, really get into it, but people will fall asleep. Unless you're a Boeing engineer, you'd understand. But that's where it started. I used the Cleo as my model, and we gave it to Boeing engineers, and they ran from there, and they came back and said, here it is, the most perfect spoon ever made. It will not be improved upon in 1,000 years. Congratulations. And off we went.
That's amazing. So mm-hmm. being a part of that engineering process
And coming from your years of experience as a guide, I know you said that you don't regret anything about guiding, but do you think you would ever come up with another product, or is there anything in terms of product building that you would have done differently or would like to do in the future?
No, remember the stick lead that just came out? That was mine, by the way.
Oh, that was yours?
Mm-hmm. I came up with that.
I should probably stop telling people that was mine. But no one believes me when I say that anyway.
In Salmon Trout Steelheader about 5-6 years ago, probably something like that. I called it the stick lead. Look it up. I don't know when it was, but that's an approximation. But I came up with that. It's amazing how things work their way into. I'm sitting, I'm getting ready to go fishing, if you know what I mean, before I step out in the morning with my buddy JD Love at his house up in Forks. And he has all these old magazines of Outdoor Life and Field and Stream, and one from 1973. I picked it up and it said fishing the Kalama River. Oh, pretty cool. So I'm flipping through there. And the guy says, I drift fished an entire season on the Kalama with wire with a very thin lead wrapped around it, you know, matchstick lead that fly fishermen use. You know, they wrap it around. He wrapped it around a coat hanger. And he used the same one all winter long, never lost it. I'm like,
something to that.
So I'm like, I'm going to try that. So I found some old 1/8-inch hollow core, and I put a spinner wire through it. Went out and tried it, and I couldn't make it hang up. I'm like, this is amazing. Oh my God. And I can feel the bottom. I go, this is what a tremendous, and I just happened to read an old article, happenstance, out of an old magazine. And I got the, ding, the old light bulb went on, and that's what happens. Yeah. I suppose that's how we find a lot of things, you know, it could be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you've written so much over the years. I mean, just take a guess. How many articles do you think you've written over the years?
It's over 300.
Over 300.
300, yep. Mm-hmm.
So you've contributed so much to the fishing industry. I know that I've learned from you so much. When I was guiding, I distinctly remember running into issues like challenges in low water. And I would remember something you told me, and I didn't really realize it until now reflecting back. But each fishing trip that we went on together as, you know, friends or with Richie or whatever, I felt like you were actually preparing me for some of those moments. And anytime I've ever called you or had a question, you've always been so willing to help. And I guess my question for you is, why did you help me? Why do you spend all of this energy, time, and effort to help other people?
Because we don't do it for the money. We never do. Like, I saw a post the other day where it showed a picture of one of our guys from Loomis had his young son sitting there looking at one of my old books, and just said, starting them out right. And the kids looking at that, I went, man, that is everything. That means more than money. That means more than fame. Nothing. If I can help people, if I can get them on the right path, and then somebody comes to me and says, hey, man, you did this for me and you did that for me, I appreciate that so much. Bam.
I love that. What I'm about.
When I started working with you, you know, Richie, such a good friend of mine, love him to death, told me, he said, hey, Bill, I got somebody who wants to be a guide. Didn't say if you were male, female, Klingon, didn't matter. Right. Didn't know who you were. I got somebody I'd like you to work with and talk to and get them on the right path to guiding. And I said, my pleasure, Richie. I said, I promise I'll help you. And I made that promise. Until they plant me, help you. There you go.
Love it. And it was the start of a good friendship. And I tell the story before I introduce you on the podcast, but the South Park dialogue that we had when we met, that's when I knew we were going to be friends.
That was really funny. I'll never forget that day. That was really
neat. Very good. Okay. So I kind of want to go off road a little bit, a couple quick fires. So I asked you if there was another profession. You mentioned bowling. So here's what I really want to know. Do you think a reality show about fishing would work?
Absolutely. I'm going to give it up right here on the air. It's called Fish Impossible. Think about that name for a second, right?
Fish Impossible?
Fishing Impossible, like Mission Impossible, right? You get dumped off somewhere and you got like 48 hours, you know, you're like blindfolded. They dump you in a boat. You don't know where the hell you are. You're in a boat full of what you need, and they give you whatever tackle and go for it. And then you can get help. I don't know. Something to that effect. Right. I mean, it's we'd have to have some kind of conflict because, you know, you can't have a reality show without some kind of conflict, you know, be yelling at each other and yelling at other people and mass stuff going wrong. You know, it'd just be hilarious.
Amazing. Good. So my dreams are still alive for a fishing reality show.
I mean, it could be great, man. I mean, we'd have to have, you could darn near do it on the bass circuit now, and you know, guys yelling at each other, pushing each other down. What are you doing fishing on my point? You know, and pushing guys down and throwing stuff at them. You know, I don't know. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Quite frankly. Okay, good. All right. Your go-to order at your favorite hometown restaurant.
Ooh, you ready for this? Salt and pepper squid. Boom. Done.
Just say it again. Salt and pepper squid.
Salt and pepper squid. Yeah, I got a thing for that. Number two would probably be a really good sushi roll with every kind of fish you can think about it rolled up in there. That'd be number two.
Where is this restaurant? Where do you get salt and pepper squid?
Anyway, you get it right. There's right here in town. It's called Sumo. In downtown, they have really good sushi. Matter of fact, I had a sushi roll there today.
Really?
Stopped in my endeavors, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Favorite fishing shirt. Tell us about it.
Ooh. My favorite fishing shirt is one I bought at Sportco. Probably, 15 years ago, they had a big stack of them sitting there. Yeah, and on the front, it had something like commercial fishing in Alaska. On the back, it said Sockeye Slayers. On the back, right? And I bought three of them. I've since lost two, but I still have the one that's my favorite one to wear whenever I go. It's obviously sockeye fishing or kokanee fishing, whatnot. But I love this thing. It just, it's ratty and it's just old. It's got so much juju, man. You know, I gotta have it. That's my favorite fishing shirt of all time.
I knew you would have a juju shirt. I just felt like you would. Mm-hmm. Okay. Weirdest thing you've ever done on the river?
Well, let's see. There was the time Sasquatch threw rocks at us. That was pretty weird. That's a whole podcast in itself right there. The weirdest thing I've ever done on the river. Been so many of them. Guys, if you have children listening, this is what they don't want to learn. But many, many moons ago, when I was not very intelligent and very young, my friends and I went on the Queets River and we drank an extraordinary amount of alcohol, which we shouldn't have done. And we basically launched the boat and passed out on the river bar in the bright sunshine for 12 hours. Never fished. The three of us woke up as it was getting dark, extraordinarily sunburnt and very sick, and it was very, very stupid. So that's probably I'll lump that in with the dumbest and weirdest thing I've ever done. But never fished, drove all that time and just had our gear all over the bank and put the boat off the trailer and never and left it right there, and the door was wide open on the vehicle and battery was dead.
All that. Mm-hmm. Caught a good buzz, but not much else, huh?
Oh my goodness. Stupid, we turned it up to 11 that day. Oh, yeah.
Have you ever been lost on your way fishing on a trail that you know?
Oh, well, you and I did that.
That's why I asked.
Momentarily, but we figured that out because it was a small area. But up on the Gold River one time, I was trying to get around this one pretty much up there. It's all the way to the bottom of the canyon and all the way back up and all the way around, all the way back down. I thought I was going the right way and I got turned around and I went away from the river. Oh, there's another shooting star. Oh man, awesome. Oh, squirrel.
Yay! What a good night. Shooting star night. That's good.
This is really badass. I love it. Is it badass?
Yes, all of those things.
I went the wrong way and I was dehydrated and disoriented and I thought I was going to die. It was crazy, but I found my way back. It was stupid.
I think you've probably forgotten about more adventures that I've had. You seem to have like so many adventures and it's so amazing. I love hearing about them all.
Cool.
So let me ask you something a little bit more serious. What is something that people don't know about you that you wish that they did?
How do you think about this one? I'm pretty much an open person. I don't have much. If people know me, that I just kind of told you I really wanted to be a stand-up comedian. That's kind of my, if you look on my spoon fishing book, it's like 65 years old now. Look on the back of it. I even mentioned back there that someday that I talked about stand-up comedy taking over the world. I said it right on the back and about the author. But that's something that's been a passion of mine all the time, because I think the toughest thing in the world, and as you know, as being a seminar speaker, you get a taste of it. When you get up there and you're in front of all those people, it's just you.
Yeah.
And you are just up there. I mean, your soul is bared, and it takes a special kind of person to be able to stand in front of people and be entertaining and have the timing. And I think it's the toughest thing in the world to do. And it really got my attention because it was so difficult is why I wanted to do it. Yeah.
I love that. Okay, Bill, what would be your Real Housewives tagline?
Oh, I know. I may not be the best spoon fisherman in the world, but I'm way ahead of whoever's second.
Tell us about what you're passionate about right now.
Right now. Well, I got so many irons in the fire, but right now I'm passionate about, I'm really just because where I am and because I really don't have my steelhead fishing over here has been abrupted. It's trout fishing. For trophy trout. It's something I did as a kid a lot, you know, in between those times when I didn't have the car and I had just the bicycle and my buddies and whatnot. But I'm getting into the trophy trout fishing right now. I'm getting to learn, appreciate the beauty of lakes and other streams, you know, primarily lakes in desert areas, high mountain lake, high mountain eastern pine, just things that I've never seen, hardly ever seen in my life. And I'm catching species of trout that I've never caught, and it's so different, and it's another way to just absorb nature while you're out there and just dig what's going on, you know. And I'm learning again, whereas steelhead fishing, you know, you never stop learning in steelhead fishing, but I'm pretty much starting to stagnate there, you know, which is kind of why I went to fly fishing a little bit. But it's just something so brand new, and I'm going to new places, and I'm trying new techniques, and I'm learning etymology and all this weird stuff, and that's kind of my passion right now. That's what I'm
doing.
And
is this like a seasonal fishery over there? So it's springtime right now in the Pacific Northwest. Is trout fishing just right now over the next couple months?
Yeah, exactly. It's what happens is right after ice out, and right now is zinging time right now. Now is when you start hitting the lakes, you start doing your thing. And in May is kind of the magic month. And once June gets here, it depends upon how high the lakes are. Once everything starts to get hot and warm towards the end of June, it's over again till fall. But we got 2 months over here, April and May. That's just, and that's when you get that. Sometimes you get that sage rain when you're out there on the desert lakes, and it's just really cool.
That does sound it's really cool. Can I bring my boat over? Can we go fishing and do that?
Anytime. I would suggest May if you want to catch some giant triploids that are like 5 to 15 pounds all day long on a fly.
Sounds terrible.
I'll put you through it.
Okay, Bill, thank you so much. Now tell us, if people want to follow you and like, you know, your adventures out fishing and that sort of thing, where can people do that?
I'm still, you know, I call myself Mr. Analog. It's still in this. You can follow me on Facebook. Just look up Bill Herzog. And there I am. I'm probably one. I think there's another guy who's a musician in Oklahoma who plays the saxophone. That's not me. So I'm the fishing guy. Follow me on Facebook. You can find me in Salmon Steelhead Journal. I just wrote my piece this month on hatchery and wild. Yeah, so I'm kind of going in that direction. I just did that. And, of course, Salmon Trout Steelheader Magazine. And you can find me, you know, on tour with Loomis, Shimano, doing our thing. You know, probably when you see you, you might see me.
This is true. We are often seen together.
Well, not like Superman and Clark Kent, you know.
Basically the same thing, but better with fish. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today, Bill. And I look forward to fishing with you. Thanks for sharing your experiences, and we'll catch up with you soon in the future.
Okay. Thanks, Ash. I'll talk to you later. Be good.
Bye-bye.
Bill Herzog is one of the like funnest people that I've met in the outdoor industry. And if you get the opportunity to go to an outdoor show, a sportsman show in the Pacific Northwest, definitely come and see us at the G. Loomis Shimano booth and say hi to him. He loves chatting with folks. I mean, he'll definitely, like, whether you want him to or not, he will say something like some sort of joke. It'll be funny. You'll love it. He's just a wonderful person to be around. So before we finish up here, I must dub the King Salmon of the Week. This is something that we do every single week because there's always someone that deserves to be recognized for their efforts to do something good outside, do something in the name of conservation, or just otherwise be a good person and do good person things. So this week, the King Salmon of the Week, I dub thee to excel long-range sports fishing. So these guys put out an announcement today. It is labeled Waste Management Announcement. And in an effort to become as green and as environmentally friendly as possible, Excel Long Range Sport Fishing decided to eliminate all single-use paper and plastic items from their service. So the things that they're getting rid of, any paper plates, cups, bowls, bottled water, utensils, everything is being switched over to reusable versions of those items. They have coffee mugs for everybody on the trips, and they have drinking water available on board to fill up water bottles. They make a note that our environment is important to us, and we feel this course of action is a good start to helping reduce waste from items that can easily be reused. So Excel Long Range Sport Fishing, good on you. I dub thee the King Salmon of the Week, and thank you for setting such a wonderful example for other businesses who will hopefully follow suit, because we all benefit from efforts like that. You guys are amazing, and if you guys listen to this, like, please reach out to me. I would love to get in touch with you guys, and if anyone listening is familiar with Excel Long Range Sport Fishing, please, like, share this with them, because I want them to hear their kudos. So you guys, these conversations, these type of people, and this kind of fun is truly why playing outside is necessary and enriching for me. I remember that Bill Herzog and I shared carrot sticks and laughs 4 or 5 years ago on the beach, but I couldn't tell you if we caught a fish or not. There are pieces of these stories that are replicable, and there are pieces that are not. I can go on a fishing trip anytime, but I can't replicate the day where someone invested their time in me. We had fun together. They invested their energy, their comedic flair. And I can only be thankful that fishing created that experience for me. And this, my friends, is where I leave you, where we disembark until next week. So long.